Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan, family sports for the Union Tribune. Ryan, it just occurred to me, and I've thought about it before, but I mean, now, do we have the stupidest show title? Since no longer could it ever be considered that a prospect is going to end up playing for the Padres. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Maybe for future, before next trade deadline, we should change the name of our show. Here we are, the day after the trade deadline. Padres play the Cardinals, three games coming up, 2 months to go in the season. I hate to throw cliches, but I don't have any new words for the wheeling and dealing that AJ Preller did on a whirlwind day. My goodness. Where do you want to start, Ryan?
Let's start right there. You warned, I think you used the word seismic a couple of times before the trade deadline, warning that this was going to be a big day. Even by that high standard, were you surprised at how many moves they made yesterday?
Yes. The enormity of the moves and then the moves themselves. And I would say, number one, that they were able to keep everybody. Look, I don't want to say that any of these guys are game changers, even Mason Miller, because, you know, he could be here just to protect a bunch of 2-1 deficits if the offense goes back to doing what it, you know, was doing before the last couple of weeks. Ramon Laureano is having a great season, but it's like his best season. And in some measures, by far, Ryan O'Hearn is a good hitter, not a great hitter. So I don't want to go like too far beyond like, oh, this was so great. They, you know, they didn't get Juan Soto. And you know how I feel about how much Juan Soto actually changed things. But they tried, man. And they got some good players. And I don't think you could say they're not better than they are. But yes, what he did was shocking to everyone that I've talked to. And I'm sure that it, you know, it'll people will be talking about this for days. Now, as you know, I am very appreciative of real life. So I love that it happened and it was this crazy, crazy ass day. And now I love that these players are coming here. They're going to play and we're going to be talking about games and how the Padres are doing.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, to me, I think the big headline here is the Padres are going for it. They're going for it to the possible detriment of 2026 and beyond. Do they think they can catch the Dodgers? Wait, Kevin is holding off. Yes, Kevin.
No, go. I just wanted to ask. This would take us on a side trail that maybe we don't want to get to, but that we should. But your topic about the Dodgers is probably more pertinent that we talk about it like right now. But I like the idea that they're mortgaging the future. Might they be? Yes. Didn't they do that in 20? Oh, and then in 22 again? Oh, and then last year too? When are we going to stop saying that the Padres mortgaged the farm or that their system is barren? Now, it might be. And one day, AJ Preller is going to have a reckoning. But like, whoa, because Baseball America or Keith Law or whoever else does all these rankings, like, I'm so tired of the experts and like the Padres system, and they don't have anybody. Really? Because they just got some pretty decent players. Now, Leo DeVries, but that was one trade. They got some pretty decent players with a barren farm system. So I just, the fact that they also got a bunch of controllable players. They're actually in pretty decent payroll shape next year. So the idea of mortgaging the future, it is true, but I just, it's not as bad as people think. I'm not saying you were saying that, but it's like, both can be true. They went for it. They will have some bills to pay, but they did not destroy themselves for the future. Like by signing Xander Bogaerts or Manny Machado.
I was speaking more to Leo DeVries. And even baseball people, non-Baseball America people, but real baseball people were surprised that this guy was moved. Let's start there. To me, that's the most interesting of all the trades that they made. What does Mason Miller bring? Where does Mason Miller slot in here? And then I've got a bigger picture question for you after we talk about this.
The difference between a big leaguer and a future big leaguer is one of them's in the big leagues. Carlos Asuaje was ranked as far high as Leo DeVries. So look, also, AJ Preller doesn't give a darn about this because he traded CJ Abrams, Robert Hassel III, James Wood, Mackenzie Gore. Like, so I'm not necessarily by saying that defending AJ Preller, but like the shock factor in this is like, I don't know. Look, was I look, they said Leo DeVries was untouchable as recently as like a few months ago. So, okay, yes, it is shocking. But like, he's not a sure thing. And I don't care if Xander Bogaerts hits 200 for the final 8 years of his contract. If he continues to have a good season this year and the Padres win the World Series, that was a good contract. That's my opinion. And I think that people in the moment who have tears streaming down their face when they're watching the parade would agree. Now, they'll be screaming in 2 or 3 years, but they will be the first major championship for the city of San Diego. So then I'd say the same thing about these guys. If one or two of these guys contribute to a World Series championship, go watch Leo DeVries in 8 straight All-Star games and go to the Hall of Fame. You got your championship with Mason Miller locking down the 8th inning or sometimes the 9th, or Robert Suarez gets hurt or, you know, struggles and Mason Miller takes over and it doesn't require you to then move Jason Adam into that and Mander Morahone up an inning and Estrada up an inning. You have built-in cushion. You have rest for a bullpen that is weary. I have a hard time ripping or even though it's our job, questioning and having these real harsh hot takes. And again, not saying you are, you're just starting a discussion about a team, you know, trying to get better and trying to show their fans and their players that they're trying to win. I just think it was a fantastic day for AJ Preller and the Padres. And that is with me having started this program saying, I don't know, man. Ryan O'Hearn could come here and be, what's his name? Who's the guy? Who's the famous guy? I'm
Ryan Ludwig.
Thank you. I knew Ryan it was Ryan. Ludwig. So that's who he could be. Absolutely. Yep. So, yep. And again, AJ Preller is going to have a reckoning one day, about what he's done. But this, I think, was fantastic.
Yep. I remember the year they got Soto, the Padres also got Brandon Drury and Josh Bell. And what did those guys amount to? Pretty much nothing. I think Brandon Drury hit a home run on day one as a Padre and really struggled after that. That said, if the Padres need to get 3 outs to eliminate somebody from the playoffs, you've got Mason Miller. I mean, let's talk about this guy. Nobody in baseball throws that hard, that consistent.
Right.
There's a guy who touches 101 with his, or averages 101 with his fastball, has touched 103, 104. This guy brings a very different look to the end of the Padres bullpen, doesn't he?
It's mind-boggling, and that's amazing because the Padres have more hard throwers than anybody and have more pitches at either 98 or 99 this year than anybody by a long shot. And this guy, 98, 99, that's nothing. It's his warm-up throw.
Yeah, it's a changeup.
Yeah, it's his warm-up throw out in left field, maybe. But we haven't ever seen him pitch in the kind of situations he'll be pitching with the kind of things on the line. I'm not questioning him. I mean, the Padres have done their homework on him. They did their homework on him back from the time that he was being drafted. But, like, this is going to be a new situation for him, too. He's worked multiple innings. He was a starter. And the Padres see him as a starter, or I mean, as a reliever. There is no plans right now for Mason Miller to become a part of their rotation in the future. This is, Robert Suarez is probably going to opt out after this year. So Mason Miller is your closer for what? 6, 7, 8, 9, 3, 4 more years. So this guy is, I love what it does. Now, this is all in theory, and that's why I can say I love what this does, because it's all in theory. This gives guys rest. This pushes, my goodness. The other day we made a big deal. Jeremiah Estrada came in the 5th inning, right? Not like he hasn't done that before, but he's your 6th or 7th inning guy, right? Depending on the night and the lane, who's up and all that. Jeremiah Estrada or Adrian Morahone routinely in the 5th, and especially in the playoffs? Like, that's crazy. That is crazy. Now, look around and what the Mets did for their bullpen, too. Like, it's crazy how good the contenders' bullpens are now. What are we going to have? A bunch of 1-0 games in the playoffs? It's my kind of baseball, actually.
Yeah, fast baseball. Is that what you're saying? I'm a big fan of tight baseball, too. Yes, fast, intense. It's what makes baseball the best sport. Kevin, I think that this is worth noting only because I haven't seen a lot of this out there. They also add two left-handed pitchers in J.P. Sears from the A's and Nasty Nestor Cortez, remember him, from the Brewers. These are two guys who are not only left-handed, but funky lefties, right? I mean, Nestor Cortez does the hesitation stuff, kind of Hideo Nomo-ish, but left-handed. Then you look at Sears, who's, I mean, practically sidearm as a starting pitcher. There are a lot of good left-handed hitters in baseball, Kevin. Were these moves made with the idea of getting A, a little bit more left-handed, and B, just being funky? I know AJ Preller likes his funky pitchers.
Yeah, you're going to try to a little bit of insurance, right? Because now you're going to have six, basically, you know, you're going to have six veteran starting pitchers, right? But we don't know what Cortez, you can't say what Cortez is. I mean, he had the flexor tendon strain in his elbow. He's been out since, what, April 4th? Supposedly come back anytime. Sears has a 4-5 ERA, something like that. He's been a decent pitcher for the A's, certainly. You could see one of these guys or both working out of the bullpen in a short series or something in the postseason. I mean, it'd be fascinating how they use these guys. You could see one of these guys having to step up and be a starter in a game two or something because of an injury. So they were able to get themselves Martin Perez plus, maybe. Don't know that it'll work out as well. That was incredible what Martin Perez was able to do. Got himself some run support last year too, but that was really remarkable at the end of the year. Of course, he wasn't on the playoffs rosters. So yeah, it mixes things up. That is a great point, and it could work in their favor. It is not something they've been concerned about at all, obviously, having been so overwhelmingly right-handed. Ruben Niebla has his pitchers, not that you're going to bring in somebody at this point, but he does it. He makes sure that his pitchers have pitches that move all different ways to be able to go against righties and lefties. And the Padres are pretty good with their splits, righty lefty. But that does bring a different look to the Padres.
Yep. Let's talk about Freddie Fermin. Padres acquired a catcher, got him from Kansas City, where he was backing up future Hall of Famer Salvador Perez. It seems to me like the Padres like a lot of this guy's traits, and this is an opportunity for him to play regularly without a Hall of Famer there. How do we see that split with him and Elias Diaz breaking down?
You know, it's interesting. It might go where he's the hot hand. I wouldn't see them breaking up Diaz and Nick Pivetta, for instance, right? That's working pretty well. And they do, but they really did. They DFA'd Martin Maldonado, and Diaz has been very good. But Martin Maldonado was the sage, right? He's the guy who's, work with pitchers is what saved his bacon for as long as it did on this team, right? So I could see Fermin going to a two-third, him starting two-thirds of the games. But, Diaz has established himself with these pitchers, but they got rid of Maldonado and they brought in Fermin for a reason. And we'll see. Again, he's having a down year. He could come in and be the best bat that they got because that's just how baseball is. He's had some decent years. The funny thing is, he's been behind Perez, but Perez DHs on a fairly regular basis. And Fermin, I think, has caught 55 games this year and started 55 games, I think. And so it's not like he was on the bench all the time. So when they're talking about that, now he's not going to be behind a guy, it does make you think, well, what does that mean? Because he was getting pretty much the same split that Diaz was getting. Recently, Diaz had caught more, so they were getting, Diaz and Maldonado were getting more to a 50-50 split. But before that, it was like 60-40, Maldonado. So it'd be interesting, but I would think they brought this guy in, as long as he hits, to get his bat in the lineup.
Yep. Among recent Padres catchers, we're talking career OPS here. Gary Sanchez, 770. Number two is Freddie Fermin at 697. Ahead of Nola, Higashioka, Jorge Alfaro, Campusano, etc. Elias Diaz's numbers were thrown off a little bit by the fact that he played his entire career in Colorado before last year. But he, at least based on career numbers, appears to be a significant upgrade offensively over both Diaz and Maldonado. Fair?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they were terrible. So yes. Acceptable numbers for a catcher.
Yes. Yes, yes. We're not Johnny Bench, Mike Piazza aren't walking through that door. You just need a guy who can be an average hitter.
And the big part, and I think this is a part of why maybe the reaction nationally to the Padres was more like awe as opposed to awesome. They didn't like think the Padres did like made themselves that much better, right? They're looking at the Padres' overall numbers as opposed to how they played for a month and a half at the start of the season and how they've played now for at least 2.5 weeks, maybe even going on a month. So now we're talking about how they played for basically half the season, which is one of the best teams in the league offensively. So if their best players, who I always said were the most important, are doing that and performing more at that level, that's why I think you can be excited about a Freddie Fermin, Luriano, O'Hearn, because now you're padding your bench, you're making your lineup longer, you're giving guys rest, you're piecing together a bench, and you're putting guys in places that now that Jake Cronenworth can bat seventh or eighth. And you don't have a black hole at catcher at number nine. And because you already have guys that are performing, you're not asking these guys to come in and, you know, have a 900 OPS.
Right, right, right. Let's talk about that Orioles trade. Padres sent away six very, very young, recently drafted players, all in the class of 2024, to Baltimore. In exchange, you get Ramon Laureano, who's been linked to the Padres, Kevin, forever. And Ryan O'Hearn. Laureano, the Padres could bring back next year at what, $6 million or something like that to play left field. Ryan O'Hearn is a straight rental. How do both of these guys slot into their lineup? And, you know, how are they going to juggle O'Hearn and Gavin Sheets, who seem at least on the surface to me to be practically identical players?
Yeah, probably sixth, seventh in the lineup, fifth maybe. O'Hearn, a lefty batter, so you gotta, you know, figure about out how you're going to do that. Mike at the bottom of the lineup has been putting Mike Schilt more of the lefties together. I mean, sometimes you have to if you got five of them in the lineup. But yeah, like I said, I think this drops Cronenworth down to eighth, and that's awesome if he can extend innings, right? And that's it can be the role of the eighth hitter. Yeah. Again, I think it makes your bench better every single day. And that is, I think is huge. But I don't see him disrupting Mike Schilt, disrupting the first four spots in the order, why that there would even be a reason to. And unless he believes that maybe even dropping Merrill down to fourth, with the way that he's going, though he's hitting a lot of balls hard. I mean, yeah, it's really interesting what he's going to do with this lineup. It's he has gone from, man, what's he going to do with the lineup to, oh, what's he going to do with the lineup? And I think that that's exciting.
Yep. Trenton Brooks, local guy, seems like a very nice guy, good dude. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference in terms of when you see Gavin Sheets swinging a bat on deck to pinch hit and Trenton Brooks swing a bat on deck to pinch hit. Do we think Gavin Sheets is now a bench player, at least for the stretch run here?
I think that's probably the primarily where he's at. I mean, you got these guys, you got them to play. Theoretically, they're better, but Gavin's been a big part and has had some big hits, but he also has had some big hits off the bench. So yeah, this might be Gavin Sheets becoming like a super guy off the bench, right? And you need to have that. I think that that's probably it. I'll tell you why, too. You start to get an awful lot of off days coming up at the latter part of the season. And they have been using the DH for a way to get their regulars rest. They don't need to do that as much now. So I'm not sure where the playing time is for Gavin. Unless Gavin got super hot and one of the other guys wasn't. But yeah, I do think this moves Gavin Sheets to the bench. I was sort of led to believe that yesterday too, that he's the first guy, right? Like that, that goes there. But he'll get his starts too. That's, for the most part, unless you're Tyler Wade. Mike does a pretty good job of moving, and that's not on Mike Schilt. But I think that, yeah, what will be interesting, and it's I think it's fairly obvious, but, you know, they've got to make some room on this 26-man roster. The pitching piece is pretty easy. I think they have some tough decisions here. I think Bryce Johnson, that's what I'm led to believe, is the guy that stays. Not only has he been hitting better, but that's not what he'll be. All things go as well as the Padres hope with their new additions and their offense going the way that it has been. Bryce Johnson's going to become a defensive replacement and a pinch runner. That's Bryce Johnson's role probably for the rest of the season if things were to go. So that means Tyler Wade, you know, you got some tough decisions to make. Tough decisions because of guys that you like and you think bring a lot to the clubhouse. But when you add six players and there's not really any urgency for the pitchers, the starting pitchers to get put on the, especially, Nestor Cortez is on the injured list. So you can wait a little bit there, but you bring six guys in, you're gonna, I don't want to say disrupt, that makes it sound negative, but you're turning over quite a bit of the chairs in that clubhouse.
Yep, one quarter of your roster. Two interesting points. Tyler Wade, the guy who's too valuable to play. Very curious to see what happens with him. He passed through waivers last time. I wonder if a bad team or a team maybe with a more pressing need might jump in and try to claim Tyler Wade if the Padres try to pass him through waivers. Number two, Gavin Sheets has also played some first base in his career. This is just my thinking here. He's cheap. He's controllable. I wouldn't be surprised if Gavin Sheets was playing first base for the Padres next year. Just a thought.
But hey, absolutely. I don't think that he's done a remarkable job in left field. I don't think that his future is in left field. So, yeah.
Yeah. And he's been, again, you know, if there's a parade through downtown in October, I think we will look back at some of these guys who have either been traded. So the Koleks, you know, Stephen Kolek, Ryan Burgert, or maybe the guys who aren't going to play as much like Gavin Sheets, they helped hold things together when things were starting to fracture, I think, a little bit earlier this season. That's probably worth noting at some point.
Great point. I mean, absolutely. And, you know, look, the price to get a catcher was two back-end starters, right? A lot of times when guys are traded away, and I want to emphasize, like, if that was a text you sent me, I would have done those two red exclamation points, or right? Like I'm going to emphasize what you said about the importance of Kolek and Berger, but they're back-end rotation guys, man. Like, They're rich in back-end rotation guys now. I mean, okay. Because people act like, oh, they've done so much. Oh, they have. You're right. Guess what? The stress level of having to rely on Kolek and Berger to continue as young pitchers to navigate, oh, please, please, four innings, five innings, keep us in the game. I mean, that's nothing against those guys. That's the reality of being a young pitcher who's not named Paul Skenes. And so they had to get those guys up. They're a dime a dozen. Like, that's the reality. That's how an assassin like AJ Preller has to think. Not like, man, he is so grateful to Stephen Kolek. But sorry, I'm going to find another Stephen Kolek tomorrow.
Yep, and they create, and I think that this goes back to what we talked about in the beginning. I think the magic of AJ Preller, the trades get a lot of attention, the trades get the headlines, but he and his team, I think, do a really good job of creating prospects and creating pitchers, right?
Thank you.
They can conjure these guys, you know, kind of from out of nothing, and then they trade them because that is what AJ Preller does, right? He has a decade's worth now of stats and of a track record to back this up. What AJ Preller does is he creates prospects kind of out of nothing, and then he trades them for established players. This is what, since the Padres started trying, this is what he does.
You just said it in a nicer way than I did at the outset of the show. And so, yes, absolutely. And you got to understand that the Padres are dealing from a different situation than some other teams. First off, the Royals needed pitching. Okay. They started Rich Hill a couple weeks ago. The Padres are dealing with some teams who are not looking for better. The Padres only are interested and players that are better than what they have, players that fit a piece to get them to a championship. Not every team is looking for that. Not some teams just want guys, right? Or just need guys. The Padres don't need guys. I mean, except for in certain situations, right? But like, so like, that's the other thing. You're dealing from a different situation. And AJ Preller is dealing from a situation of, yeah, I like Stephen Kwolek and Ryan Burger, but that's not who we need right now. Like, and that's how he's dealing. The Royals are going, hey, we can find another backup catcher for Salvi. We need two pitchers that can give us innings to get through this season. And wow, what a wonderful right. marriage they found.
Some teams are happy making the tournament and are happy putting out a roster. I'm looking at you, Milwaukee Brewers, every year that gets them into the tournament. Other teams are built to try to make noise in the tournament. And I think that that's what this Padre team is right now. I mean, I'm surprised. I figured that they would make a couple of moves to address the stuff we've been talking about since April and May. I'm somewhat surprised that they have pushed all of their chips into the middle, but maybe I shouldn't be.
I'm not surprised that, well, I'm surprised they went here. If you think about it, we talked about catcher, we talked about bullpen, we talked about left field. Okay, so I'm not surprised they went and got those, right? Okay, yes. Here's where it is. We're not only do you go get Laureano, you go get O'Hearn. It's like, that's classic AJ Preller. Not only do you go get a bullpen guy, you go get a guy with people who said was untouchable. Mason Miller was not for sale. And you gave them something, someone who was untouchable. Like, those are the surprising parts, right? Like, the guy gets drunk and just goes on a bender. That's what a – and sometimes it gets you Austin Nola. So beware, okay? Sometimes you traded Ty France and Andres Munoz, okay? So beware. But sometimes you got Tanner Scott, Jason Adam, and you got yourself to a point where only because your offense sucked for 24 innings were you not maybe going to be the World Series champion. Now, that stuff happens. But in my mind, until we take a look back and see at the end of this season, last season's trade deadline was AJ Preller's best. Now, this may be, but I have no idea right now, the less than 24 hours after it happened.
Yeah, it's last question here, Kevin, because I know we're running out of time and you've got a busy day ahead of you here. Do the Padres think they can catch the Dodgers? This is an absurd question to ask on August 1st.
Yes,
they do.
Absolutely, they do. I think they would have told you that they did before the trade deadline. And depending on who it was, who kind of maybe they didn't know what was going to happen going to the trade deadline, but they knew what they were going to try to do. So if you asked AJ Preller, he'd be like, yeah, because I'm going to go get Mason Miller. I think the players would have told you they could have, and they were, but like, I don't know that they would believe it like they do now, but I've already talked to people that, yes, absolutely, the first round bye is what you're looking for right now.
Yep. And you know who I don't think got much better at the trade deadline is the Dodgers. I was a little surprised that there weren't more impact moves there.
It is awesome. Brandon Gomes, their general manager, the one who does all the talking, he's the guy below Andrew Friedman. Go look at his quotes from yesterday, because it's like the quotes AJ Preller would have given if he hadn't done what he did. It was about how if they're talented players, they're the guys that they're counting on, you know, play better. If the guys that come back are as good as they think, right? And AJ Preller could have said that. If Michael King comes back, these guys keep hitting at the top, the ones that, you know, are supposed to, like, and you know what? The Dodgers can be justified to say that without a doubt, right? Like, they got a pretty good team and they've got some guys underperforming and they've got some guys that are injured. So they might have been the one team that maybe didn't need to do it. But yes, you're totally right. It's like a little bit surprising that a team with those resources did not go out. Now, on the other hand, they kept a lot of prospects and the Dodgers can probably just keep churning. But the fact is, that's a different philosophy than what AJ Preller has, which is, hey, we won a championship this year. Now, I'm not saying the Dodgers don't, but like, you know, they've already invested 300 and whatever gazillion dollars. So they feel pretty good.
Yep, absolutely. Padres, Cardinals, sorry about it, Cardinals. We're not going to talk about you today on this podcast. The three-game series starting at Petco Park tonight. We'll be very interested to see what the Padres starting lineup looks like. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.